Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Firewater Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP 10 is Lieutenant Kellen. Hi, Kellen. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for having me. Oh, I'm a lieutenant. That's awesome.
You're nice enough to do the show. Everyone is at least an officer. That's the way it starts. And as you say, if you come back in multiple years, you'll rise up through there. We know some of our guests are generals at this point, or four-star generals. You know what I mean? So there's upward mobility here on MASHcast. So we're here to talk about episode 19 of season 8, Morale Victory. The original air date was January 28th. 1980, written by John Rappaport and directed by the always reliable Charles S. Dubin. But of course, Kellen, this is your first time on the show. So how did you become a fan of MASH?
So I became a fan of MASH originally during COVID. I was working in the emergency room as a housekeeper at that time. And I thought MASH would be a good, I guess, outlet or like catalyst for how healthcare workers were feeling at the time. You know, there was a period where we were like revered by the public and listened to, and then there was a period where there was backlash and mistrust. So I thought MASH would be a good outlet for those feelings, and it was, and I've been a fan ever since.
Wow. It's interesting because I know people who sometimes don't want to watch a TV show that, I mean, obviously it's very different from the setting that you were dealing with, but there's some similarities, as you just pointed out. But I know a lot of people who don't want to watch a TV show that's related to what they're doing in their real life because it's too similar. My sister was a surgical nurse and an emergency room nurse for many years, and she would not watch ER for that reason. She's like, why do I want to see that? I live it every day. Now that she's out of that, she hasn't done that in a long time. Now she watches The Pitt because she's comfortable being back in that world. Yeah. But that's interesting that you made a beeline for it and that it paid off for you. I mean, how did MASH get on your radar? No pun intended. Exactly. I mean, why would that occur to you to watch? Was it just you knew it was a medical show and you'd heard it was good and you're like, oh, now's the time to give this a shot?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I know when I start a new series that I'm either going to be like, oh, okay, very casual viewer, or I'm going to get just completely invested and obsessed with it. And I figured MASH was one of the latter. So I was like, okay, I need to wait until I'm in the right place for this one. And then, you know, that was the right time.
By the fact that you're on MASH Blur tells me you went all in on, on the show. So.
No, I did. I'm so grateful to MASH fandom. I've made so many fellow fans have become friends of mine that I've known for 5-6 years now. And I met my partner through a MASH server online. So it's really become a big part of my life.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fantastic. Oh my God. That is great. Now, how fast did you consume the series? I'm always fascinated by all the MASH people, how fast they go. Some people like to pace it out and you give themselves a treat. Other people are like, no, I'll take it as many as I can. How long did it take you to get, or have you not yet gone through the whole series?
I'm a little bit of both. I watched it pretty quickly through the first few seasons, and then I wanted to kind of spread it out more because I was like, oh, I'm going to run out. I'm going to get to the end. So I have not actually watched in real time the finale because I don't want it to end. Right.
Wow.
But I've like read the transcript and I know what happens, but like I can't say goodbye to my friends. So
yeah. I'm not laughing at you. That's some enormous self-control you're showing there.
Someday there'll be new MASH left for me to watch. You know,
it's like Schrodinger's MASH, you know, it's not over
it's
yet because I haven't watched it. That's wow.
Exactly.
Well, that episode, the final episode is 2 hours long. So you kind of got four to watch.
That's
if
right.
You want to break it up like
four
that.
New episodes.
So they're four new episodes. That's I would not be able to do that. I'll just say that I would not be able to do that. So that's okay. All right. Well, that's very admirable. Do you have, I mean, the fact that you've reached out to me, you reached out to me to be on season 8, I'm going to guess I already know the answer to this question, but do you have a particular slightly favorited era of the show versus some others? Obviously the show has some distinct eras.
Yeah. I'm a Charles fan. I'm a huge Charles fan. I think season 8 is such a strong string of episodes all in a row. Like every time I put in my DVDs, I watch it on DVD. I look at the list. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even pick. These are all so good. Season 8, definitely my favorite, but like 6 to 9, 10-ish, I think are all really strong.
See, now that's, I find that just fascinating when someone creates a piece of art that is Well, it doesn't even have to be a big piece of art, but a lot of times it is. When something has a long history, right, and something goes through multiple eras, there can be kind of a consensus, a little bit of like, well, this part is not quite as good as others or whatever. And yet you will find someone who swims upstream against that, right? And so it's sort of funny to me that you say to you, the strongest seasons are like 6 through 10, when to a lot of people, 9 and 10 are kind of like the weakest seasons. I actually sort of agree with that. I feel like 9 and 10 are slightly on the weaker side, but those are your favorites. And I always find that fascinating, right? That's just people can take in things in different ways. And that's what happens when you have a piece of art that is that huge, right? There's just so many things
Yeah,
to get
there's
into it.
something
And
for everyone.
something for everyone. And I've mentioned on previous episodes, Charles is way more popular than I ever would have imagined. Many more people have written me and said, "Oh, I can't. I want to do the show now because you're in the Charles years, because those are my
Yeah, you're in
favorites."
the
And I was like,
Charles era.
"Wow, it's amazing." So, okay, well, that's very. Congratulations, you met your partner through MASH. That is
Well, thank
unbelievable. That
you.
is so cool. I love that. That is fantastic. So, okay, well, like I
Yeah.
said, let's talk about Morale Victory, as I mentioned, originally aired January
Yes.
28th, 1980. So, tensions are running high at the 477th, with most of the camp being bored to tears by the movie. The same one that's been shown every night for weeks. When Hawkeye and BJ get up during the movie and flawlessly mimic the dialogue as it goes by, it enrages Potter, who bellows, "This is the war, you know. Be grateful we got a talkie." But this only seems to spark further unrest, and when Rizzo complains about the lousy food, everyone agrees loudly. The mood gets so ugly, everyone cheers when the PA announces that wounded have arrived. In OR, one of Winchester's patients has several wounds, including ones on his hand and leg. He spends all his time dealing with the leg, making sure the young man isn't paralyzed, with the work on the hand being a bit of an afterthought. After surgery, Potter puts Hawkeye and BJ in charge of morale, and they draft Klinger to help out. Meanwhile, Winchester is there when his young patient, a private named David Sheridan, wakes up in post-op. Winchester is chipper and friendly, even making Hawkeye and BJ-esque jokes, and assures Sheridan that despite his serious wounds, he will walk again. But Sheridan doesn't seem to care about his leg wound, only asking about his hand. When Winchester informs him that he has suffered some nerve and tendon damage, Sheridan asks for how long. When Winchester informs him it will be permanent, Sheridan starts to break down in tears. Winchester is confused, and Sheridan tells him that his hands are his life. He's a concert pianist. As the young man cries, Winchester is stunned into silence. While Hawkeye and BJ try to assure everyone in camp that they have some amazing plans to boost morale, which is a complete lie, Winchester tries to get through to Sheridan. Sheridan is demoralized and is convinced he has no future, which Winchester says gnaws at him. Sheridan says he doesn't blame Winchester, but it doesn't bring my hand back. Winchester turns to Father Mulcahy for advice. Winchester admits that he's worried that while he can perform miracles in the OR, he's somewhat lacking in his ability to provide comfort like some of the other doctors at the camp. Mulcahy reassures him that there's no one there who has a greater love and appreciation of music, and it's through their common love that he can get through to Sheridan. Hawkeye and BJ, having gotten an idea how to throw a beach party on the compound, are thrilled when Klinger comes back from a trip to Incheon with a tub of live crab and a footlocker full of beach sand. While the party goes on, Winchester wheels Sheridan into the Oak Club, where he introduces him to piano pieces written for one hand. At first, Sheridan resists, saying he can't make a career playing of a few freak pieces. Winchester doesn't give up, admitting to Sheridan that, more than anything else, he's always wanted to play classical music, but lacks the true gift. He can play the notes, but I cannot make the music. And that Sheridan's true gift is in his head and his heart, not his hand, and there are other ways he can share that gift with the world. Sheridan relents and tentatively begins playing the piano. He quickly gets into it, however, playing the piece with vigor, and Winchester follows along enthralled. The camera pans out over the compound as everyone is partying to the sound of the piano. All right, Kellen, again, we'll get into this beat by beat as we normally do, but what are your just overall thoughts on this episode?
Well, I'm so glad you picked me for this episode. I'm not sure if all of your listeners know that this was like a gift for David Ogdensteyer, suggested by Loretta Swit, and I
I
love
did
to
not know that. You
tell
put that
people
in the
that.
notes, and I wanted to ask you about that. What is that?
Oh, good. So he did an interview with, I believe the source is the disabled filmmaker. He did an interview in the 2000s where he talked about how Loretta was originally pitched this episode where she was supposed to like fall in love with the soldier, and she was like, "Well, we've already done that. I want to do something different." And she was like, what if this is a musician? What if this is someone that can build rapport with Charles? And then to go on to have the character named David, to have him like talking to himself about not being able to have a career in the arts. I don't know. I just, that really gets to me.
That's beautiful. I had never heard that story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
That's
I can send a link to the whole interview. It's really nice.
real. That's I can't believe in all my years of MASH fandom, I've never heard that story. But that really is, first of all, we know Loretta Swit, great person. We all know that. But
Yes.
she still was an actor, and that's rare among actors to say, no, I don't want the episode about me. Let's make it about
Yeah.
another cast member. Like, that does not happen very much.
Yeah, like I don't want the part, never mind. Yeah, exactly.
That's
Yeah, a
really,
little.
that's, oh, that's beautiful. That's just
He's
beautiful.
he said in the interview, when the producers told me this was from Loretta, that was the hardest I ever hugged her.
Oh my goodness. Oh,
Yeah.
that's really gorgeous. So
Mm-hmm.
I love this one. I have always liked this one. I like the fact that yes, it's an A plot and a B plot, but they are connected thematically. Of course, the title, Morale Victory, works for both, works for both
Yes.
storylines. And we do have a point where the plots do convene together, which we'll get to, and I really like. So yeah, this one has always been a standout to me, in among season eight, of just being, it's not a format buster, it's not Lifetime, it's not Dreams, it's not we're getting rid of a character, but
Right.
it's quote unquote just a medical episode. But as medical ones go, this is one of my favorites. And again, we'll get into the details of it. So as I mentioned, it opens with the movie. And so the show actually opens in black and white, which for a moment is a little like, wait, what's happening? And then we
Might be a
pan
little
out and
scary.
we, yeah. And we see that they're in the mess then. And the movie, by the way, that they're watching is a 1942 film called Tales of Manhattan, starring Charles Boyer, Rita Hayworth, and Henry Fonda. And it's Charles Boyer and Rita Hayworth on screen that we see as everyone's watching. And we point out, Hawkeye and BJ point out, that this has been playing every night for like 8 weeks. And they say everybody is so bored. I love that they still go, though. Like, they
Yeah,
know
they're
what the
still there
movie
to watch.
they still go. They still go to it. Some people are
Nothing else to
asleep,
do.
but everybody looks
Yeah.
dejected. Even Nurse Kelly looks unhappy, and she always looks very cheery.
Oh, yeah.
And in this moment, Hawkeye and BJ invent Mystery Science Theater 3000
They
because
do.
they stand up in front of it, and not only do they recite the dialogue, they even mimic the actions of the actors by pulling a chain on a on a light. Like, they mimic it exactly right. And this scene where Charles Boyer and Rita Hayworth go in for a clutch because they're about to kiss. This is once again like MASH blur fodder, right? For the whole Hawkeye and
Oh yeah.
BJ are secretly in a relationship together because this is.
Most definitely. It's a very popular scene for that. And they just get to have their little class clown moment, and everybody loves it except Potter. So obviously they're going to keep going because they have the audience on their side.
Right, which is kind of funny because it doesn't, Potter's not actually reading the room well, because
No,
he can
yeah.
see that everyone's enjoying it. And you would think that he would be, yes, I know he's personally offended that they're talking during the movie, as someone who can't stand when people get their phones out during movies. I
Right. I
understand
can't.
that, but the whole point of this is we're trying to entertain the troops, and the whole
Yeah.
tent is laughing. So you'd think Potter would just kind of grin and bear it, right? Just be like, I don't like that they're being
Right.
kind of insolent, but clearly everybody's on board with this. So it's weird that he's the one. He actually brings the room down by
Yeah,
screaming
he does.
that the movie stop.
Yeah, he's usually so good at putting morale first over army regulations when necessary, even though he's a regular army guy. So yeah, that is a bit odd for him.
And I mean, I do like the line about, this is a fine piece of celluloid, and he's like, this is the war,
Yeah.
it's my and Mildred's favorite. And this is Mildred loves Charles, but he says Charles Boyer, by the way, instead of Charles Boyer, but this is the war, be grateful we got a talkie, which is,
Right. They're still
don't know
sitting
if that's
around.
making, I don't know if that's making the argument you think it's making, Colonel Potter.
No, they'd
I don't know.
probably rather have a silent film.
And so it starts, things start getting out of control, and they're saying everything around here stinks. And Rizzo stands up and starts complaining about the food, and Potter is screaming. He's like, "That's it!" And Harry Morgan can
He
really get some
yells so
volume,
well.
right? Yeah, he
Yes,
could.
yes.
Now, this is, I have to say, when they start, even after Potter says stop, it's BJ is the one who starts the chant, new movies. And that is about the most insubordinate we've ever seen. He generally doesn't do that,
He doesn't
especially to
start
Potter, but
it.
that's how, and they're
Yeah.
dancing at one point. Like, he's really, this is like season two kind of MASH behavior, right? Of them go, I'm just being this insolent to Colonel Potter,
Is
you know? It's kind of amazing.
reminiscent of Adam's rib where Hawkeye stands up on the table. Yeah, but
It is
they couldn't
exactly
let
that.
Hawkeye do it again.
Yep. And so we get to the point that, like, as I mentioned in the synopsis, when there's an announcement of wounded, everyone cheers because there's something else to do. It
Yes.
just
Awful.
that's
That's honestly, that's true though.
that's how
That's
dark
true.
things have gotten. So we go to the OR, and we're seeing everybody working, and then Winchester is talking to a nurse, and we hear the nurse say, "You did a beautiful job on his leg, doctor." And that voice is not a voice that I recognize. It's clear, obviously, you could tell from even with all the stuff on. It's not Nurse Kelly, it's not Baker, it's not Bigelow, who is not even in the season at all. But I noticed that on IMDb, the MASH longtime resident nurse, their medical advisor, Connie Izay, is credited. So I'm betting that is Connie Izay giving the,
Oh,
because
awesome.
yeah, why they gave Connie Izay lines every so often as opposed to one of the quote unquote real actors, I don't know. But she has a way of line reading that kind of is not actory. I don't mean that in a bad way either about Connie Izay or the actors, but there's just something about the way she talks that sounds not super rehearsed in the best possible way. So again, I'm betting because she's not an actor. Connie Izay was not an actor.
She kind of grounds the medical scenes by just reciting an ordinary medical line that she might
Yes.
say like every day.
Yeah. And of
Yeah,
course,
totally.
and Winchester, of course, loves that he's being complimented because, you know, he's like, and he says, "Soon this lad will be standing on 2 feet, giving me a round of applause, for which I richly deserve." Okay.
Yes, classic.
And that leads Hawkeye and BJ to do a little routine where they go, he says, "Oh, Barrett, what is it? Elizabeth Barrett Winchester, how much do I love me? Let me count the ways." And, you know, and then in the, they talk about, well, from the arrogance ballroom, and then, you know, and it's kind of going along and it's okay. And then we get this one moment where Margaret asks about the hand. And we says, you know, what about the hand? And Winchester says, oh yeah, there's a tendon here repaired. This boy shall soon be walking home. And he goes, and Margaret says, how about the hand? Well, he says, slight damage to the flexor tendon and the neurovascular bundle, which sounds incredibly complicated, right? Like that.
Right, so he
And you,
couldn't spend time on that,
yeah, he couldn't
sure.
spend time on that. And Potter even compliments him and says, Winchester, you've got a silo full of
Shot.
smug, but you sure know your way around. What end of a scalpel is up? And then, okay, like everybody's getting along. It's okay. And then Hawkeye and BJ push it where he says, well, he'll be able to watch the movie. He's not out of the woods yet. He'll be able to watch the movie. He's still got 30 or 40 more chances to see it. But thanks to Charles, he'll be able to walk out on it.
There you go. Perfect tying the ribbon there.
And then Potter is so mad. He's like, that tears it. And, you know, I kind of get it, right? Because they are kind of insulting his command. I know that they don't mean to take it, they don't mean it personally, but I do, I don't know. Am I, do you, where are you on this? Do you feel like that they're,
No,
you
I
know?
get it. It's like that's the best that he can do, so he's gonna take it personally, especially since it's a film that he and Mildred enjoy, and he's
Yeah.
not like able to be with her, so he kind of holds on to whatever things Mildred likes in the meantime, you know? So he's always gonna take stuff like that a little more personally.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like I said, you know, he's doing his best, but yeah, I guess if you're doing a million things to get this you know, hospital running, and then they complain about something as silly as the movie, you are a little like, all right, you know, that kind of thing. So I can understand that, I guess. So he then says, well, you two going to you two in my office afterwards. And then we cut to Potter showing him this book, and he says, there's this little bestseller, is the 101, 100 to 10 Field Service regulations manual, it's a thriller from contents to
Yeah.
appendix.
I love his little spiel here.
There's a weird little bit of business where Hawkeye is holding on to Potter's nameplate and he's just sort of holding it. And it's just a weird little, like, he never does that before. Why is he doing
Because
that?
he's so bored. He's so bored that he has to resort to new things.
I guess so. I guess so. And then so Potter's reading from it and he talks about, these services are to improve morale. These are called morale services. Hence the name. And then they're making jokes, and he's like, ah, that wit and humor warms the cockles of the old ticker boys. I love that. I would never want Colonel Potter mad at me, right? Because I love him so much.
No.
He's so sweet. I would feel so disappointed in myself that he's
Absolutely
upset with
right.
me, right? Yeah.
Yep, like tail between the legs, kind of walking away. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I wouldn't be able to live with that. I kind of have that relationship, like when we go to, I've mentioned on the show, we go to conventions and stuff and we meet people that were in movies and TV. And like, I always want them to have a positive. I never want them as I walk away to like roll their eyes at me because I did something
Oh,
stupid. You know what
same.
I mean? You never want to do that. Never want to do that.
No.
So Potter's like the same way. So he hands them a book and he's like, basically give them some ideas. And he's like, everyone's going to be smiling. And they turn around and he's like, smiling. And he's,
Yeah. They love letting Harry yell, and I appreciate it because he's so good at it. He's so funny.
he really is. So they come out, and of course, Klinger is waiting for them in his dress uniform, and he's trying to get a 3-day pass out of them. And it says morale officers can give people passes. That seems like a dubious idea, right? Having a
Right.
morale, I don't know. That seems like a lot of power to give the morale officers.
I don't know. Maybe Klinger has read everything that there is to read on how to get a pass.
I mean, well, I'm not saying he's lying. I'm just saying, as a rule,
Yeah, seems
that
a
seems
little off.
like the morale officer gets to give somebody a 3-day pass. Like that seems like something that you would really want the colonel to handle. But okay, and then it says no, this is for 2 weeks, and he's like, well, I can't get to Toledo on the bottom line. And then he says, how about 3 days, Toledo, a whirlwind
A
tour,
whirlwind tour.
right? It's like it would take him 3 days to get to Toledo the way these
He's
plans.
just always the optimist. I love Klinger so much.
And he's got his whole routine worked out. He says, this place has reached a new high and low. I need to rewind, unwind. He says, company clerking is hell. You're just doctors. You don't know the meaning of pressure.
Honestly, he's not wrong. I've been a clerk in the emergency room, and it can get stressful. Obviously, it's not the same kind of stress that your surgeons are experiencing, and we're not going to discount that, but he has a point.
Now, in your job, if you don't mind me asking, how much are you interacting with, like, say, the surgeon, not surgeons, but like the medical staff? Is that part of a regular feature of your job or not as much?
Oh yeah, constantly. We always need signatures on stuff. Lots of nowadays it's insurance and not like ordering supplies like it was in Radar's day. But oh yeah,
Okay.
it's constant.
Is there anybody there who's you would suggest is Hawkeye-like or BJ-like or Potter-like or Winchester-like? Is there any one-to-ones there? You don't have to name names, of course.
I think that they write such Well, they wrote such good surgeons on MASH because they all have an ego, but that doesn't mean that they're mean. You know what I mean? I'm going to say mean a few more times. They all know exactly how much they're helping people and how many lives they're saving. And a lot of them keep that in check better than like a select few, I would think. And like
Okay.
even, Charles has a great bedside manner for all of the egotistical, venting that he does.
Interesting. Okay. That's good to know. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, no,
So
I think they're all realistic.
good. So they tell Klinger to make a suggestion box, and I like his, he's like, make a box? Any idiot can do that. I don't know. I wouldn't know how to
Love
make a
that.
box. I don't, I could probably, Klinger's, I guess, handy. And as they're talking to Klinger, Margaret comes in. And I love that Margaret has her own copy of the manual, right? She's
Oh, of
got
course she
it.
does. Yeah,
Right.
she's
Of
read it
course she
all.
does.
She's
I just
read
love that
every
detail.
film service manual.
Yeah, I love that. She has every one of them. I just love that. So, and then she points out to them that morale officers are in charge of buying, supplying items that of comfort and necessity, paragraph 86, section C, U.S. Army Manual. And so she's got a whole list. She's got this whole paper, and she hands it to Hawkeye, who of course hands it to BJ, who hands it to Klinger, which Klinger of course abjectly
Oh,
rejects
yes.
because he's being thrown down to him. And it's a nice observation here of the characters that Klinger is comfortable enough with Hawkeye and BJ that he can basically tell them, "I'm not going to do this." Right?
Yes,
In any
and
other unit,
not be
a
afraid.
corporal would not have the ability to tell two captains, "I'm not going to do this," but he knows
Right.
that these guys are his friends, and he's got the morally he's on the right side of this to say, "Hey, wait a minute, you guys are the
Yeah,
morale officer. You can't just dump everything on me."
you're just taking advantage of my willingness to help. I love, though, too, that Margaret comes in with a list of stuff for her nurses. Like, she's starting to make friends in this era. Maybe the nurses are confiding in her more, like, hey, we're missing some stuff from home. Can you help us out? I love that. She's
Yeah.
willing to go to bat for them like that.
It's Margaret will, and we've seen it across season. I mean, pretty much every season, but especially season eight, there's a lot of Margaret is always on the side of whatever the woman's side is, right? In different scenarios. And she's always like I think she's got her radar up. No, again, no pun intended, for, is this woman being mistreated? Is she being ignored? Is she being, and that's a great, again, that's a great detail for the character. But yes, I like that is a neat scene to imagine. Like they're all just writing down, like, "Oh, I want some blush and I want this," See,
And
Margaret's
they
like,
know that
"Okay, we got
Margaret
it.
will get it for him.
Margo will get it for it." Right, exactly. So then we're in post-op, and Winchester is talking to Private Sheridan, who is played by actor James Stevens. He was in movies like The Getaway, the one with Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger, which don't see. He was in Two of a Kind, the movie that John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John did after Grease. That was a gigantic flop. He was a regular on the TV series The Paper Chase, which ran for several years. So he clocked like 70 episodes of that show. Yeah. And he was also apparently a somewhat of a regular on the Father Dowling Mysteries. So he hasn't acted in a little while, but he had a solid
Had a good
roster
run
of,
there.
yeah, he had a good run, 70s, 80s, and 90s of stuff. He looks, to me, he looks and sounds a lot like Steven Spielberg.
He
Like,
did have some fam yeah, he looked a little familiar. I think
yeah.
that's it.
If you see Steven Spielberg interviews from like when he made Jaws or Close Encounters, he kind of talks like James Stevens here. So Winchester is talking to Private Sheridan, and we see that Winchester is road testing his version of Hawkeye because he's actually making jokes, right? He's like, "You had an unfortunate run-in with a mortar, or you had an intense argument with a mortar." He says, "You're quite a lucky lad. Oh, you and a mortar had a rather intense disagreement, and then he says nine out of 10 times, you'd be permanently injured, but you caught me on a good day." And he smiles and he says, "You won't be doing the Lindy overnight." So yeah, he's really
That's a
trying.
very Hawkeye delivery. Yeah, I
Yeah.
think season eight in particular, and I know he does it in Mr. and Mrs. Who, and that's only because I've watched that episode hundreds of times, but he does really start to practice like Hawkeye and BJ's kind of jokes, and I think in maybe April Fool's as well, but he like tries them out on people to see what the reaction is, and he doesn't always get the same reaction that Hawkeye and BJ do for some reason, but he's really trying.
Yeah. I mean, he's not great. He's not great
He's
at
not
delivering,
great.
but he is trying, right? He is
He's
trying
really
at least. So,
trying because
okay.
he sees that it works.
Yeah, right, exactly. And but so we, and we see that Sheridan is not even listening to him once he sees that there's a bandage on his hand. And he says, "Why is there a bandage on my hand? What's wrong with it?" And in this moment, Winchester is kind of retreating back to what he feels comfortable doing. Like he's dropping the stuff we just talked about, right? Because then he's immediately like, "Well, most kids come in here and they lose a leg." Like he's trying to be like, "Don't worry about your hand. Focus on the leg," which is what I did. And he's not paying attention to his patient at this point. He's instead of asking, "What's your concern?" He's like saying, "No, no, 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 don't worry about your hand. Think about your leg." And so in this moment, he's not really paying attention to what Sheridan, and that's the deficit that he has over a Hawkeye or a BJ or a Potter, who would immediately, I think, say, well, what's your concern about your hand? Right. And
I
I
love
like that
that.
detail. I like that Winchester is still not great at this.
I love that you pick up on that because that's the first thing we're supposed to ask, at least in the hospital I work at now, is focusing in on the concerns of the patient. You know, what matters most to you so that this appointment can go well or so that this hospitalization can prioritize, you know, how you want to heal. And obviously, he didn't have the opportunity to ask the patient this, but if he knew that this was someone who needed his hands, you bet he would have worked on his hands first.
Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, it's impractical because there'd be no way to implement it, but it's almost like it's a shame that they can't put on your dog tag, you know, like your
Your
profession
job,
or
yeah.
something, right? Just to get, just in the rare moment that both parts of me are injured,
Yeah,
save the
pick this
hand
one.
over the leg, you know? I mean, again, that would be incredibly impractical, but it's just, it really is like you do. If Sheridan could have been awake for 10 seconds on the table, he would have been able to say, my hand, you know, and but as you
Yeah.
say, you know, of course, every doctor is going to think, well, we want to make sure he can walk. That's the
Right.
main thing, right? Obviously. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, I liked it. It's like this is Winchester's retreating to what he's comfortable with, which is, I saved your leg. That's what you should be focused on. And of course, that is not at all remotely what Sheridan is focused on. And then he says,
Not at all.
you have some nerve and tendon damage. And we see that it's starting to hit Sheridan, right? And we see his eyes
Yes.
kind of shifting back and forth. And he's like, for how long? And Winchester's like, well, he's like, you know, and he thinks, and again, he thinks that Sheridan is worried that it's scarring. And he says, it'll look perfectly normal. And then Sheridan's like, what do you mean slightly diminished? And Winchester's like, a certain loss of dexterity. For how long? And then Winchester has this great, David Ogden Stiers, this great line, right? I'm afraid it'll be permanent. And he says it, I think in that moment, it's starting to dawn on him. What,
That this is a
uh-oh.
real person that he's operated on
Yeah,
and not
like,
just,
uh-oh. Because he's the way he says, I'm afraid it'll be permanent, like he almost whispers it, like he mutters it because I think he knows. You know, that like he's like, I'm afraid it'll be permanent. Like it's really low because he's almost ashamed of what
He
he's
doesn't
got
want it
it.
to be true.
Yeah. And we see that, you know, he says, oh my God. And then Winchester goes back to, he says, your leg will be fine. And
He
again,
really wants to end it on a positive,
yeah,
but
your leg, man, your leg, you know?
yeah, you can walk. Yeah.
And Sheridan's like, I don't care about my legs. And then his eyes start back and forth and he starts to get frustrated and he says, damn it. And Winchester's like, I don't understand. He says, my legs are nothing. These are my life. I play the piano. I'm a concert pianist. And that is our, and then Winchester's like a pianist. And that is our act break. And, you know, boy, howdy, right? I can imagine
Yeah.
what advertiser gets to run right after
Oh
that
my God.
moment, you know? You know, I don't know, like pantyhose or
Right.
Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat, just
Oh
something's
my God.
there.
Yeah, you forget that people got to watch MASH with commercials. Oh
Yeah,
man. Yeah, that would
yeah.
be brutal.
And you know, there that used to be a thing that advertisers would for shows like that, they would have actually, I mean, I work in television and we still deal with that to this day where advertisers don't want to be near certain sections if they can all help it in news
Oh, sure.
broadcasts because
Yeah.
obviously they don't want to, you know. And so the idea that,
Be
like,
associated with, yeah.
yeah, Saturday Night Live in the old days used to have to deal with that where they would, advertisers would say, I don't want to be near a sketch. Is there a sketch about religion? I don't want to be near a religion sketch, you know, that kind of thing. But so now, obviously, if you're booking time in MASH, you know, it's good, might be pretty heavy,
You know, it
but
might be really, yeah.
yeah, but that is a heavy act break to see the poor guy crying in the
Yeah.
commercial for Pete's sakes.
Oh.
So, we come back and we're in the mess tent. Hawkeye and BJ are going through the suggestions, and he's like, I like that. He's like, I don't know about the burning down the entire camp would be practical. I love that one. And the BJ's like, first annual Naked Day shows promise. We're working on that.
They had some
And
good ideas on that page, yeah.
they talk about the Simon Says tournament, and he's like, well, I came in first and BJ
They
came in
were the only ones
second.
there.
We're the only ones who showed up. Potter comes in and says, "Hello, Captains Heckle and Jekyll." Now, I like to ask these things for guests that are significantly younger than I am, because I'm always fascinated about the contemporary references. Do you have any idea who Heckle and Jekyll are? Is that a cultural reference that makes any sense to you?
I am assuming it was like a comedy duo.
They were cartoon birds that were crows, and they were like, but they were modeled on like a comedy act. They were kind of that sort of routine, but that's Heckle and Jekyll. So that's who they're talking about, right? Because I said, we think about this show is already 50 years old, and it's referencing things 25 years before that. So the cultural references are getting further and further off in the horizon. And I only knew Heckle and Jekyll because I watched a lot of cartoons when I was a kid. I knew who Heckle and Jekyll was, but that's who Heckle and Jekyll is.
Thank you.
So I like the show to educate as well as entertain. So
Does.
so Potter's like, "I would have been here sooner, but I stopped to watch the dancing in the streets." I just
Loves to rub it in.
He really does. And then, the Hawkeye's like, "What'd you expect? Miracles?" And he's like, "I expected the goose egg, and you guys haven't even done that." Now, I notice sitting next to him on the bench is Mulcahy, right? And Mulcahy is looking at a suggestion when Potter is talking. And while Potter, then we cut to a shot of the four of them, and we see Mulcahy crumble the suggestion and throw it on the floor. And
Oh,
I wonder, was that one filthy? Because that one was. Like,
oh
why would
my
he throw it out?
He was like, "I don't even want them to look at that one. Don't give
Exactly,
them any
exactly.
ideas."
Right? I'm like, that one had to just be really, really filthy. And he's like, "Oh, that's not nice." I don't even want the guys to see that one. Yeah, it's a subtle bit of me. Just see, he lowers his arm and he just drops it out of frame onto
I
the floor of the
love
mess tent. So.
some of his background acting is just the best. He is always having a good time.
If you're someone who's used to not being the lead in any given scene, you got to come up with a bit of business for yourself,
That's right. Yeah.
just for the verisimilitude, but also to entertain yourself as opposed to just sitting there,
Right,
whatever. So
right.
Margaret shows up and says, "Where are my cosmetics? My nurses are human beings." And then Rizzo stands up and complains about the new movie, says, "Who cares about a bunch of nurses powdering their noses?" Rizzo, not the most progressive person in the world.
No, he's
So
not.
no, he's not. So then and then they call him Mr. Show Business, and then Klinger arrives and he says, "The only nibble is a movie called Terror in the Tiny Town," which is a Western with an all midget little per the midget is not the term that's preferred, a little person cast. That is a real movie. That is not made up
I
for the
did not
show.
know it was a real movie. Oh
That
my
is a real
goodness.
movie. And it's obviously meant to be a little bit of a freak show kind of thing, and that we're the movie's kind of meant to like laugh at the absurdity of it a little bit, which is unfortunate. But we have like little person cowboys going through the swinging doors, and it's like they just walk under the door because they're smaller. But so it is a real movie. It is an actual real movie. Leading to a great line where Hawkeye says, "What do we do? Show it on a pillowcase?" Which is, I have to admit, that makes me laugh. And then they say, "What with selected tall subjects?" So I love I do. I love that joke, I have to say. I have seen Terror in a Tiny Town, by the way. I have seen it.
Have you?
Yes, I have. We had it at the video store that I worked at in the 90s, and I was like, "Well, I got to see this." And
Oh
it's
my goodness.
unfortunately, it's pretty boring. Like once you kind of get the gist of it, you're like, okay. And then it's just a pretty boring Western. But yes, it is a real movie. So then Igor holds court and talks about, the food is terrible here, but I don't, he's like, "I don't cook it."
I love this for him. He gets to just go off on the cook.
Listen to everybody who has to stand with the gripes. And he's like, "Well, I've had it. If you don't like the Swahili, talk to the cook." Where's the cook? Eating at Rosie's. I didn't know you could eat at Rosie's, right? That
Well,
seems like a new thing.
I guess so. I mean, I'm trying to think. I know Hawkeye has had cereal there, but he brought it himself.
Yeah. Does
So I don't know.
Rosie have like a salad bar? Like what's going on over? Do
I
they have
can't
like a
imagine it's
nice?
much better than eating
No.
in the mess tent.
Right. Well, she may be not limited to certain. She doesn't have to cook in the volume army cooks have to cook in, so she's probably dealing with a lot fresher
Yeah, she would have
ingredients
access to fresher stuff for
as opposed
sure.
to powder, everything powdered. But yeah, I just like the idea that Rosie's has got like a, you know, like a really robust appetizer sampler or something you could get at Rosie's. Get some
You gotta
mozzarella
make that
sticks,
money.
Rosie. Yeah, that'd be
Yeah,
great.
yeah.
Yeah. So finally, you know, things start getting a little bit more raucous. Hawkeye stands up, and you mentioned earlier the Adam's Rib episode. This is the flip side of
Yeah.
Adam's Rib because, of course, in that episode, Hawkeye is standing on the bench being the malcontent. And here it's flipped where he's the one trying to say, all right,
Trying to
everybody,
quiet everybody
calm
down.
down. So this is, you know, he's, it's as much as
Character
Mark.
growth.
A character, as Margaret said in a previous episode, not so easy to be the clown when you have to run the circus, which is, you
That's
know,
right.
from last season. So I love that. I love the idea that, you know, Hawkeye's like, oh, okay, this is what I have to, this is what it's like.
This is what I have caused,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah. And he tries to rope BJ in, and they're all like skeptical, you know, they're kind of like, okay. And then BJ says, you don't have a thing in mind, do you? And Hawkeye's like, even less than that. So they walk away. Hawkeye getting into trouble. Then we're back in the mess tent, and Winchester is talking to Sheridan. Now, this is to me the only flaw of the episode. And I'm curious to see whether you agree with this, is that it's been established, or we see that Winchester has woken Sheridan up. And he says, I'm sorry to wake you, but I feel that we need to talk. And he says, Doctor, we've talked. I don't blame you for what happened, but that doesn't give me my hand back. And Winchester says, whether you blame me or not, it makes no difference. You see no future for yourself, and that gnaws at me. I know that they've just established what's happened, but I don't know. I feel like I wish there had been one scene of that, as opposed to just them telling us that that's what's happened. I don't know. Did you feel like do you agree with, or you feel like it's fine?
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, it would have been nice to see them, I guess, getting more gritty into the argument. But I think it's kind of a one-sided argument in a way, because Sheridan is done talking about it and doesn't want to hear it. It's more just Charles trying to smooth over his own insecurities by talking and hoping that he'll eventually stumble onto saying the right thing and fixing it, which isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a serious flaw. I just kind of look at it as like, well,
Yeah.
the A plot about the you know, BJ and Hawkeye, you could have trimmed 45 seconds out of that to give us a little bit more with James Stevens talking to David Ogden Stiers. That's all. It's just a little bit like,
No, I
ah,
think
it
you're
would have,
right.
you know, would have been
I think
nice
you're
to
right.
see. And we see that Sheridan is pretty bitter. And, you know, he's like, there must be better for ways for you to spend your time because I don't give a damn. And of
Yeah.
course, you know, Winchester can't deal with that because, you know, Sheridan is, you know, yeah, he's saying, I don't blame you, but he's obviously incredibly angry. And Winchester can't deal with that. And as you say, part of it is his own ego, but also just the fact that Sheridan is just incredibly bitter. And, you know, imagine that's a tough thing to deal with. You see
Yeah,
Nurse
no,
Kelly in the
it's
background, and I always find that would be interesting of kind of like, you know, Nurse Kelly could tell people, you know what, I've seen Dr. Winchester. He's actually very sweet. You know what I mean? Like she's the only one that knows he's doing this.
Yeah, she could have, I don't know, she could have probably come and helped out, but Charles wants to do it himself, like he waves her off.
Yeah. Yep. And James Stevens is terrific in this part, right? I mean, I actually think
Yeah,
he's
he does a
it's
great job.
a really, really solid guest acting performance. So we then cut to Mulcahy's tent, and he's talking to Winchester. And you know, that's how desperate, you know, Winchester's got to be that he's talking to Father Mulcahy, who he really, really has no time for. And you know, he says, "I reach out to him, and I just no matter what I do, I cannot get through." And then Mulcahy says, "That's not your fault." And Winchester says, "Oh, it isn't. We both know that there are other doctors here who are better able to show compassion and provide comfort. I'm just very charmed by that self-realization, right? That Winchester, we've never gotten the sense that Winchester cares about that, right? That he is focused entirely on his surgical skills, but he is now butting up to something where it's like, oh, now like Hawkeye and BJ aren't just clowns. This is a part of being a doctor that I have not bothered with. And now this is becoming a problem. And so I like that Mulcahy tries to kind of let him off the hook. And Winchester is like, no. This is my fault because I'm bad at this. It's just a really marvelous scene for the character.
It is. Yeah. Like you said, it's so rare for him to reach out for help at all, let alone to go to Mulcahy. And I mean, I guess he's not really taking Mulcahy's advice on the surface. Like, he has to still kind of feel like, no, I'm still in trouble. I need more than that. Like, I need to magically fix this. And Mulcahy's not able to do that for him. But I hope that it helped him to kind of talk through it, at least to kind of have that self-awareness for a few minutes.
Yeah. And I like the Mulcahy says, Major, I know how difficult it was for you to come here. Which again is a great observation, right? Because Mulcahy knows that Winchester really doesn't probably have a lot of time for religion, you know? And, and then he says, you must not give up. And then he has a great line from Father Mulcahy and Christopher. There's no one here with a greater love or knowledge of music. And that's the key. You must show him that his musical career is not over. He must not waste the precious talent that God has given him. Now, of course, that's Mulcahy's point of view, that that's a gift from God. But okay, that's the way Mulcahy's going to look at it. But these are two characters that don't get a lot of scenes together, right? You can probably count on one hand, no pun intended.
Very few.
The amount of Winchester Mulcahy scenes, but this is really true. Mulcahy is really doing a terrific job trying to talk to Winchester in a way he understands and saying
he's so good at that. He really is. I don't know if Mulcahy is underrated, but I do feel like he meets people on their level genuinely very well. Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't realize how many people he's helping.
Yeah. It's really, really nice. It's a really beautiful scene. So then we're back in the swamp and Hawkeye and BJ are kind of just free associating, trying to come up with ideas while BJ talks about the birthday party where he played Spin the Bottle where they sent out for Chinese food. They're kind of going on and on about that. And then BJ is throwing some darts. And then he says, no matter what food we come up with, as soon as it hits those tin trays on those crummy tables in that rotten tent, it's still going to be a mess. And then Hawkeye is like, wait, why don't we eat outside? A picnic. And he does this, wait a minute. And he gets in the line of fire. And he's like, wait a minute. He doesn't want to get a dart in the face from BJ. It's a great bit of physical comedy. I like that. And then he says, we'll have a cookout. I get a great idea that will save us from a lifetime of death. And he's like, we're near the sea. We're going to have a beach party. And BJ is kind of like, whatever. And Hawkeye's clearly, we're going to have a big fire, blankets, lobsters. We're going to be your inch on. We're near the sea. And if there's going to be sea, there's got to be seafood. So, solid idea. Now, I love eating outside. That is my thing. We partly moved to Florida just so I could eat outside year round.
Oh, yeah.
Are you been in that too?
Yeah. As soon as the weather gets good, I'll sit out on the patio for breakfast for like an hour.
Oh, it's heaven,
just
isn't
a long,
it?
Yep. Mm-hmm, not doing anything. Just enjoying the meal very slowly in the weather. Mm-hmm.
It's so fantastic. When we, a couple of years ago, my wife and I came down here to visit my in-laws. And we lived with them for 2 months. And they never eat outside because they've lived here for a quarter century and they're just
They're over it.
Right. Mm-hmm. But we kept going out to dinner and we kept eating inside. And I'm like, what are we doing?
Why aren't we looking at the beach and enjoying the sun? Yeah.
What are we doing? So now that we're down here, I'm always like, all right, yeah. And my wife luckily is all for it. But when we go looking for restaurants, every place down in Florida has seating outside because it's Florida. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So yeah. Oh man. It is like, it's one of those small things in life
Yeah.
And yet I am like, that is like, that gives me such joy, right? Is to just to eat outside. It's absolutely wonderful. So, but I love that's how Hawkeye comes to this realization, is through BJ, of saying, no matter how good the food is,
Yeah,
if it's
it's
on those
the
shitty
atmosphere.
trays in that crappy tent, it's still gonna be kind of lame. And it's, I love that they sort of brainstorm it together.
They do, and Hawkeye and good food is like the ultimate power couple to me. Like, he comes up with this idea so quickly because he loves good food and he almost never gets to eat it. So I really appreciate that he does in this episode. That's so special for me.
Yeah. So they go to Klinger, and of course Klinger is like, well, geez, I'm going to drive across a war zone to get some crabs, like, what the hell? And then he finally says, you guys wanting me in the driver's seat certainly puts me in the driver's seat. How about a 3-day pass? And they're like, thief. Thief is such an ugly word. How about we say entrepreneur?
Right? Leave the man alone.
So, and they sign it, though. They do say, they and they
They
leave it
do.
blank, so he can go whenever he wants. And this is where, for one moment, our A and B plots intersect, because Winchester comes in and he says, Colonel Potter tells me you're going to Seoul for him. And of course, Hawkeye is like, you were planning on going to Seoul the whole time. It's only an inch from Incheon. BJ's like, you stole 3 days from us. And of course, Klinger again with the semantics. Stole, such an ugly word. How about we say creatively acquired? And I love that he grabs the clipboard and he kind of just stares and he looks at the paper admiringly. Like, he's just looking at, like,
Yeah,
it's
he
a
got it. He finally got
he's just kind of like, almost, I want to like get it framed, right? It's so beautiful, this 3-day
it.
pass with my name on it.
Oh.
So then Klinger, I mean, Winchester says, Klinger, this is a list of pieces of music. The military library in Seoul should have at least some of them. Please get them for me. Thank you, gentlemen. And he does it in one, almost like one big sentence.
One breath.
Yeah. And then BJ says, that's the most fun he's been in 2 days. And Winchester walks out. And it's kind of fun. You're like, ooh, they're talking about the other plot. Yeah. Talking
Yeah.
about the other thing. It's
Like,
great.
they haven't seen each other in 2 days, other than probably just sleeping. Like, they don't know
Yeah.
what's going on at all.
Yeah, it's great. I love all that. I think that's just great. Just, I like it when they can, the script writers can tie it together into one thing, and you're like, okay, great. Now, it is very funny to me that the idea that Winchester has given Klinger a list of music, right, to get. He's trusting Klinger will know what stuff to
Yeah,
get.
how to find any of it?
I mean, like, I'm guessing that maybe if it's a library down in Seoul, like, you can just go to the librarian
And
and
just like
say,
check it out.
can you give me this? And the
Someone can
librarians,
help you find it.
the librarians are, a specific skill set and very helpful and will help find music. But I just like the idea that you would ask Klinger to help find classical music pieces. It's just like, bow. I
And
don't
he
know.
pulls it off.
He pulls it off, as we know. So we cut back a little bit later. Obviously, night has fallen. Klinger is not back. There's an angry mob outside led by Rizzo. I like that Hawkeye and BJ are wearing their Hawaiian shirts, right? Trying
They're
to
ready to party on the
ready to
beach.
party, yeah, ready to party on the beach. And they're getting worried, that Klinger isn't back. And then Margaret gets mad, and Winchester gets mad. He's like, because he wants his music. And then Potter points out, and he says, "Let me know if this crowd gets out of control, so I can go out there and egg them on." It's just.
You know, that's how he gets his best work out of Hawkeye and BJ, though, genuinely, is by
Yes.
like being against them like that. So it
Right.
works.
It's just, he's it's in this instance, it's a stick, not carrot from Colonel Potter. And then he says, how could you 3-day suckers give Klinger a 3-day pass? That's like asking Willie Sutton to lock up the Huskow. Willie Sutton, the only reason that name is famous at all, he escaped from jail many times. That's who Willie Sutton was famous. I had to look that up. I didn't know who that was. And he points out that Klinger took his Foot Locker. And it is kind of like, they should know Klinger better than that, right? They should think
Yeah,
that
he
he's
could be
already,
gone.
yeah, come on. And just as they're arguing, they hear some honking, and we see Klinger pull up. And I love, the first thing is he hands the sheet music to Winchester. And Winchester exits the frame, and he just says, "Ah, thank you." And he like runs right off the screen. We see Potter watch him as he runs away, but that's all we get from that. And then Klinger says, "Be careful of the Foot Locker. Treat this with care. It's loaded with live crabs." Now, the amount of sand that Klinger would have to bring back, that Foot Locker probably must weigh about 500 pounds.
I saw that. I was looking at IMDb trivia and someone did the math where they were like, well, this is the size of a Foot Locker and this is how heavy sand is. I'm like,
Yeah.
oh my goodness.
How did Klinger manage
How
that?
did he hoist that thing up there?
He had some burly GIs in
He had some
Incheon
help,
help him
yeah.
load it into it or something. But yeah, that's like that is that would be just very incredibly heavy.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, not to, I don't talk about this a whole lot because who the hell cares, but this episode was definitely one of the early signposts for me and my way to vegetarianism, because they talk about that the thing is filled with live crab, and next scene everyone is gorging themselves on these crabs, and I'm kind of like, well, those crabs, they wanted to be alive too, like it's just all like, okay,
Very understandable turning point, yeah.
There was lots of little things on the way where I finally until I finally went, but that this was one of them. I remember just kind of being like, oh, I kind of feel bad for the crabs. Like, I
Yeah,
don't
like
know.
they
It's
came to
one.
the party.
Yeah, come on. But then we cut to the party, and it looks like they're having a lot of fun. They've managed to find some like Chinese lanterns hanging up. I don't
Yeah,
know where they found where they
some nice
found.
exterior shots here with some new props. Yeah.
And I noticed that everybody is in Hawaiian shirts. Potter's in his cowboy
Yes.
hat. Everyone's got deck beach chairs. I don't know where they got the beach chairs from
I
all of a
don't know.
sudden.
Yeah, they've all got a bunch of brand new stuff for this party, but I like that.
So, okay, that's fine. And then they point out that yes, underestimating Klinger has been a national pastime. And then he says, "I hate to eat and run, but I've got to pack for 3 days and a fun-filled trip to Seoul." Now, who fills in for Klinger?
Good question.
We've
It
never
seems like they
seen
don't
who
have a
that
lot going
is.
on, so maybe it's fine.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it, though. Yeah.
Somebody's
I
got
don't
to do
know.
it. We never see that. We never see who fills in for
That's
Klinger.
true.
When Radar was gone, Klinger would fill in, but who fills in for
That's
Klinger?
true.
Yeah, we never figured. We never find out
Radar
who that.
comes back for a few
Yeah,
days, and it's
exactly.
just
They
him.
call
Yeah.
him over from Iowa, and we see Winchester bringing Sheridan into the O Club, and it's a nice bit of serendipity in that the O Club is empty because, of course, everybody's out on the compound on the beach party
Ooh, is
now.
that where they got the chairs from? Do they have folding chairs in the O Club?
No, they're not. Every time I've seen the
Okay,
chairs,
well, I
they're
don't
not
know.
folding chairs. So, yeah, I don't know where these are getting from. Now, if you want to do some fan fiction, and you could say that Winchester made a special request to everybody to say, "I'm bringing a patient. Can everybody clear out of the O Club?" Or maybe
Oh, he
everyone
would have paid
just
him off.
or paid him off or something. But
Yeah, no
nevertheless,
problem.
everybody's out of the O Club, and he starts showing these pieces for the left hand to Sheridan, and Sheridan says, "What do you want me to do to make a career out of a few freak pieces written for one hand?" And Winchester's like, "No, I don't want any pretension about your physical ability to play. It's not my point." And then he talks about Ravel. He says it was written for an Austrian concert pianist named Wittgenstein, who lost his right arm during the First World War, and he embarked on a long search to commission piano works for the left hand alone. And he says he went after composer, turned him down till he finally met Ravel, who wanted to take on this challenge of writing classical music for just one hand. And this whole, and you see, we cut to Sheridan, who's kind of got this he's got this kind of frown on his face because he's just not having it, and then finally Winchester gets to him with a couple of great turns of phrase. And he says, "Your gift can't be silenced if you refuse to let it be." And then he says, "David, I," first of all, he calls him David, which is a different thing than Winchester would do. But he points out where he's like, "I've always wanted to be a concert pianist." And he says, "I have hands that can make a scalpel sing." He says, "And I can play more than anything in my life. I wanted to play music, but I do not have the gift." And this great turn of phrase, "I can play the notes, but I cannot make the music." And I have used that in my life, not necessarily referring
It's
to
so true.
myself, but it's a great turn of phrase of saying, I can do the thing, but I can't turn it into the thing that people need it to be. It's a marvelous, marvelous turn of phrase.
Really, really good bit of writing and excellently delivered. I think this and so many moments of Charles's humanity are intertwined with music, so it's a really meaningful speech to come from him. But I
Yeah.
think a lot of his journey toward like being, I guess, more human is hand in hand with envy. Like he's only coming to this realization because he wishes he was a musician. He wishes that he had this ability. And the best he can do is try to give it back to somebody who did have it before.
Yeah, it's really, really beautiful.
It is.
It's the admitting that like I'm a world-class surgeon, but I would have wanted to do this other thing if I could
Yep.
have, you
Not
know?
enough for him.
Yeah, it's just absolutely marvelous. And he talks about, you know, you have this gift and you can find new ways to share it with the world through the baton, the classroom, the pen, talking about you could be a teacher, you could be a writer, you could be, you know. And he's like, these works, they're for you. And, you know, you and the piano will always be as one. And then finally, you know, Sheridan kind of like relents a little and softens and he starts playing. And initially it's very tentative, but then he gets sort of more and more into it.
He
And
gets into it, yeah.
yeah. And there's this great shot of David Ogden Stiers Winchester really like listening.
Yes.
Very
Yes, I've made a
focused.
note for that too.
Yeah.
He has
You
his
know?
hands in his pockets, which he
Yep.
does a lot, but so he can just focus on what he's doing in the moment.
Yeah.
And his eyes are like welling up with tears. It's such a beautiful scene.
Yeah. It's really, really great. And watching, you're just watching this guy. And I like that this scene, no pun intended, they let it play out, right? I mean, we've got 23 minutes to play, you know, to get all this done.
But
But
they
they let
devoted time to
They
the
devote
song.
a full like minute to this guy. Now, obviously, it's not James Stephens playing. They're
No, it's
cutting to
not.
another hand as it's playing, but that's fine. It's fairly well put together. It's
It's
not
well
really
done.
very noticeable. And we see that he's kind of struggling with the piece a little. He's like gritting his teeth a little and trying to. And we see Winchester's eyes darting back and forth, right, to the piano, to Sheridan, back and forth. It's great. It's really one of my all-time favorite Winchester solo stories. And then we pan the Charles Dubin pulls his camera out over the bar, which is a nice little detail. And then I really love that we cut to the party outside and we get some audio of the ambient noise of the party, but it's over that is the piano playing over the
Continuing on,
party. I just think that's a beautiful touch. Right, I just think it's a really, really beautiful touch to let the
It
episode, the
really
main bulk of the
is.
episode, play out to the piano as everybody is partying. It's just a really, really, really beautiful second act for the episode.
It is to prove that he can still play songs and still connect to people and move people, because that's what he was doing as an artist, and he can still do that.
Now, if I may ask this question, and you feel free not to answer it if you don't want to, but like, do you have? Is there any other sort of like other way of other work life that in another life you would have maybe pursued? Does he have something that you're like, I just never could have gotten into that, but maybe if I had started over it day one, I might have pursued it. Like, do you have like a thing that Winchester has that he would want to be a concert pianist, but he's a doctor?
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, I relate to Charles in a lot of possibly worrying ways, except for me, I would have wanted to be a writer. I think I could have if I had, I started young, and I think that if I had maybe taken classes or like pursued more, I guess, public opinion, like I was very private about it and very, very guarded about it, I think I could have been writing professionally. But I look back and I go, well, I can do it as a hobby. That's okay. Like, I'm sure Charles plays piano for fun, but he doesn't want anyone to hear him do it. You know, because he's afraid it's not perfect. So,
Okay, that's
yeah, no,
fair.
totally.
I will say for myself, I have always been fascinated by the ocean and the sea life, and I feel like in another life I would have when I was young enough to start like applying myself to like the sciences, I would have headed that. I would have liked to me to like to have been
Are you going to
like
say marine biologist?
yeah. Like
That's
something
what I
like,
wanted to be as a kid. That
there
was
you
like
go.
my
Yeah. There's,
go-to
I just,
answer. Yeah.
I am so fascinated by how much life is under the ocean that we just don't know about. And I find it
Yeah.
really, really fascinating. And I will tell you, like, we, you know, we, as I mentioned, we're down here in Florida and we're down at the beach a lot and we take a lot of like ferry rides. This is another thing I love. You put me on a ferry, you just put me on a boat where I don't have to do
You have
anything. I
me
can
on a
just
boat.
sit. I don't, 5 hour ferry, sure. But like we occasionally will go by a boat full of local like government scientists or you know that are
Oh,
like
yeah.
doing something relate and I'm like that just looks fascinating to me, you
You
know,
want to
that
know
just
what's going on
I'd
over
love
there?
it,
Yeah.
yeah. So you know if that had been if I had known I would have been that fascinated, but I would have when I was a young school I would have
Oh.
paid attention to in class. And I did not, and I would have applied myself to do that. But so that would have been my other thing of like,
Oh,
you
cool.
know. So again, maybe not marine biology, maybe not go that far, but something
But you
related.
can still enjoy it as a hobby now, like you do.
It is, yeah, I do find it
That doesn't
really,
diminish your enjoyment of it.
no, absolutely. So,
Good.
it doesn't haunt me the way it haunts
Good,
Winchester or anything
good.
like that. But yeah, so then we come back for our button scene, and Winchester is enjoying some nice cognac. Hawkeye and BJ are post-party, and they're a little drunk.
They're a little drunk.
Hawkeye is still pulling some crab out of a crab leg and eating it with like a, it looks like a pincers or something. Like it looks like a medical implement that he's using to
It might
eat the
be.
crab.
They
And
do repurpose them a lot.
Winchester gives them like a toast, and BJ's like, "Look at this, Hawk." He's like, "Major Giggles wasn't even at the party. We cheered him up by remote control." And they say, "No, you know, no fooling, Charles. You missed a great time and a great party." And they're all just getting along. And Winchester says, "You know, you need not concern yourselves. I'm doing just fine, thank you. Each of us must dance to his own tune." And that is the end of our episode. Great episode. Great
It really
episode of
is.
MASH, right?
It really is. Yes.
Even their kind of like regular episodes are like way better than most other TV shows, you know? It's like
I agree.
this is terrific. I love this one. Great performance by James Stevens, and it's that much sweeter knowing what I know about it that this was Loretta Swit handing this to David Ogden Stiers. Like it's absolutely marvelous.
Yeah, I hope that he enjoyed it and got to, like, I don't know, give his past self a speech or something that was meaningful to him in some way as an actor. It's so cool to watch that.
Yeah, really, really, really terrific episode. Just right in the middle of the season. So, well, Kellen, do you have a favorite line or joke from this episode?
Oh, I should have taken notes. I love how the chant in the kitchen goes right to kill the cook. They just escalate it all the way to chanting kill the cook. I love that.
We
Gets
go
me
right to
every time.
murder.
Yeah, they're like, okay.
My favorite, it could only be one line, which is when BJ makes a suggestion to improve morale as the better movies, and Hawkeye says, "That should be easy, considering that the fact that the best one we've seen in months is the Field Pack, your canvas buddy." That is my
I
all-time. I love
love their army movies. They
when
all sound awful.
I when this show is over, I may have to collect a list of all the fake movies that MASH
All
came up with.
the,
Right, they did like Godzilla and the Bobby Soxer and the imperialist running dog and the showgirl. It was a running gag that they came up with fake movies, but nothing makes me laugh like the Field Pack, your canvas buddy. Like that every single time.
Yeah, they just
Because
make the army one sound extra boring. I love that.
exactly, because it's like I like the idea that A, it's a movie about your field pack, which is boring, but then whoever made it is trying to make it sound interesting by giving it the subtitle,
It's your
Your
friend.
Canvas Buddy.
Yeah.
It's the most boring thing imaginable to watch a 25 minute
Yeah.
short about your field pack. I laugh at it every time. And I love the way Alan Alda delivers it. The field pack, your canvas buddy. It's just, and I imagine it's like a
Yeah.
little animated field
I
pack
hope
that like
so.
talks to you.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. You know, it's just something like that. All right. Oh my God. I'm nappy. Your knapsack. I
Right? It's
imagine this
like
whole thing
Dora the
going by.
Explorer.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Something like that. It's just,
That guy.
oh, I
Yeah.
love that joke so much. So, well, Kellen, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is just terrific. And again, thank you for that detail about Loretta Swit. I can't believe I didn't know that. Really adds so much. And the fact that he's named David, that way David Sofgansaggia is talking to himself. It just make I already love this episode. Now I like it a little bit more.
Yeah, it adds another layer to the humanity that Charles is exploring through the arts, for sure.
That's beautiful. Now, one last question I have about your job. Does anybody else that you know of at your work watch MASH? Is this anything that anybody else would be, you think,
You
interested
know,
in?
I have mentioned before, like, oh yeah, I'm in a MASH server. Oh yeah, I'm going to a MASH thing this weekend. So like people know I watch it and people like have seen it. You know, anybody that
Sure.
was around when it was airing has most definitely seen MASH and knows what it is. But as far as like, are there people that are as big a fan? I don't know. I don't know. I'm
Okay.
afraid to open that door. It's possible.
I will tell you, by the time everybody's hearing this, it's long after I already did it, so it's kind of not even valid, but I'm mentioning it now. Is there's that HBO show, The Pitt, right, about the
Yes.
Pittsburgh, which I love. I absolutely
Yeah, I
love
do
that show. It's
too.
really great. And in one of the earlier episodes of season two, they mention one of the characters refers to the prose from Dover, which is a line from the MASH movie. Hawkeye and BJ refer to themselves as the pros when they get called in to operate. They go to Tokyo to operate on this child. They're called the pros from Dover. And I listened to, because of course I do, I listened to a couple podcasts about The Pitt. And one of the shows I listened to mentioned that, and they were sort of like, they were a little askance. They were looking a little askance that other characters on the pit would know that line because it's from MASH, and they felt like MASH is kind of out of date.
Oh
And
no, of
would
course
any
they've
of those,
seen MASH.
exactly, they were like, well, look, they're like, okay, Noah Wyle's character would know it because he's like in his
He would definitely
50s,
know it.
but the younger ones, and they were a little bit skeptical. And I, of course, was deeply offended at this, so I had to go and I wrote an email, like a
Oh.
little loser that I am. I wrote an email,
No.
very polite. I wrote an email and I just said, as the host of a MASH podcast, let me tell you, there is a whole new generation of
That's
MASH
right.
fans in their 20s
Yes, there is,
that know the
definitely.
show and love it. And so I'm betting that a lot of the people in the pit would know MASH. Now, whether they're going to read that email, I don't know. But I did speak up for the
There
young
you
MASH
go.
fans so
And
people would know.
not to take us totally off topic, but there was an interview with the cast members where they were, I don't know, they were doing some kind of quiz, like, what character are you? And there is a section on MASH, and the younger actors do know of MASH as well. So their characters
Ah,
might.
that's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, it's good. That makes me happy. So yeah. So I was out there fighting the good fight for the younger MASH
Not in
fans.
vain.
Not in vain. So anyway, well, Kellen, again, thank you so much for doing the show. I really appreciate it. It was wonderful talking to you.
You too. Thank you so much for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
So well, thank you everybody for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And of course, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcasts. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on the show of your choice. So big salute to Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K., Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Ram, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. So again, thank you all so much for the support. Thank you all again for listening. We will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
Here's the list. I'd like it filled immediately, please.
Happy to be of service, Major. Here you are, Beach.
There you are, Klinger.
What is this? You guys are really great morale officers. Klinger, put up a suggestion box. Klinger, get gone with the wind. Klinger, go to the drugstore. Pardon me.
Where are you going?
To build a suggestion box. I got a doozy to stick in it.